Hello! Today on Man Without a Country, we take a look back at the 2016 Democratic primary, and, let's see what we can learn from it. So this week on the Facebook page, I made the comment that I'm baffled at the hatred that some Democrats still have for Bernie Sanders. I just don't get it. And the post got a ton of comments on it. Apparently, it touched a nerd. touched a nerd, which is my other podcast, pleading for someone to love me. No, it touched a nerve. And again, if you're listening here and you don't follow our page, that's easy. It's facebook.com/manwithoutacountry. People still, 3 years later, have really strong opinions about Bernie and Hillary and the 2016 Democratic primary. And to me, nothing is more terrifying than the idea of people holding on to that, because it feels like people are still carrying a deep wound over it. And Democrats need to bury this quick and fast, because if we don't all get behind the nominee, whoever that is, which, you know, I've said this 100 times, if it is literally, if the Democratic nominee is a potato with a diarrhea mustache smeared on it, that's who I vote for. That's it. Diarrhea potato 2020. If it's just going to be these old wounds and bitterness and infighting, we're going to have a repeat with a Trump win. That's the bottom line of it. And that isn't, you know, saying that in this way of like fall in line. It's just the reality. So if you're an anti-establishment progressive and you want a perfectly clean candidate, great. Fight for them. That's the whole point of the primary. And if they don't win, grow up and support whoever wins for Democrats. And if you're more of a centrist and you feel like the progressive wasn't very nice to your candidate, or even better, their supporters were kind of mean to you on Twitter, grow up and vote for the candidate anyway. We have to. But I'm curious, and the reason I wanted to do this look back is not only for that curiosity, but hopefully maybe a salve a couple of wounds in folks that might be listening today, because full disclosure, I voted for Bernie in the primary. I'm not a Hillary supporter, never have been. But that doesn't mean she wouldn't have been a million times better than the option that we have now. And during that very contentious primary, it felt to me like there was a lot of shady stuff going on. But further down the line, you hear other information, you hear conflicting reports. So maybe it wasn't that shady. I don't know. For me, once Trump got elected, I had about a month of bitter, like, how could Hillary blow it feelings? And then I just let it go. But apparently, some people haven't yet, which is fine. But I think maybe now is a good time to look back, now that the dust is settled, and see if anybody or everybody has any legit axes to grind over 2016 and what we can do about it, looking forward to 2020 candidate diarrhea potato. What's funny here is that I'm going to do the Saved by the Bell timeout. What's funny here is everything I just said. That chunk was the opening spiel that I jotted down and the idea I had coming into this topic before I researched it. But now that I spent some time on it, I don't know if this is going to be a very long episode of the show, because to me, when the primaries were going on, you heard these stories of voter suppression at various polling places and during the caucuses, et cetera, et cetera. And my memory from that time was it felt like Sanders was really getting flagrantly railroaded. And I fully expected to come back to this and see, like, well, this accusation held up, but this one didn't. And this was actual voter suppression, and this wasn't. I assumed it would be kind of a mixed bag. What I found, though, has been entirely different. And to use the Gertrude Stein quote, like, there's no there or there. At least when it comes to the voter suppression angle. Now, when it comes to the DNC as a whole, there's definitely stuff to dig into, but this was stuff that kind of came out after the fact. But, you know, it wasn't the stuff that people were necessarily mad during the primary. So we'll touch on that in a minute. But for now, let's focus on the voter suppression and the harassment. If you remember, during the campaign, it seemed like at every polling place and at every straw poll and at every caucus, there was some kind of stink about Bernie voters getting disenfranchised somehow. And I don't doubt that happened here and there, But what I was expecting to find and what I found were so far apart. It's honestly jarring because the internet is forever, and yet Q conspiracy theorist. But when I started Googling for the show, you know, I started researching stuff. You don't really find anything. It doesn't matter whether it's Google or Twitter. And that's not, by the way, that's not me saying that you literally can't find any records of people saying anything about how they were, you know, turned away. But it's more or less hearsay. There wasn't any journalistic follow-up. There was nothing that I found that showed beyond just kind of hearsay that anything actually substantial happened. And what I expected was to see that some of that stuff was validated and some of it was not. But what I have ended up finding is basically all of it is not. To give you an idea of what I'm talking about, I'll focus on the two biggest examples, and those were Nevada and New York. If you recall, Nevada had a lot of Bernie supporters up in arms about being denied at their polling places, and then voters in New York being wiped from the voter rolls. But looking back on this, there's reasons for it. And they can be frustrating, but they're reasons nonetheless, right? It's like, you know, a reason, but not an excuse, I guess you could say. Nevada, when you look back on it, sounds more like voter ignorance than anything. You had tons of supporters for Bernie saying they weren't allowed to vote in the Democratic primary. And while I'm sure you can find a story here or there, everything I could find basically boiled down to this. In Nevada, you have to be a Democrat to vote in their primary. Case closed. And that's a fair rule. Otherwise, you'd have people from other parties coming in and trying to screw up the primary. And so what seems to have happened in that is that Bernie supporters were, like, obviously energized by him and his presidential run. And a lot of them were first-time voters, and they had never bothered to register as Democrats, if at all. So the election comes around, and they find that they either didn't know they had to be registered as Democrats, or they found out too late, or whatever you want to say. But there it is. Now, this could be a great argument for automatic voter registration, but the idea that this was some coordinated effort by the DNC to block these votes from happening, I don't see it anywhere. And I was honestly really expecting to, right? And that's usually a clue for me that something is truthful, because if it goes against my expectation, obviously, it's not like a confirmation bias type thing. It's like, oh, yeah, that must be the reality of what happened here. Because I expected there would be some shady stuff still sitting around and left unaddressed, but it really hasn't. It does seem that innocuous. It seems like the majority of it was people just not registering in time or registering properly. Now, in New York, what you have, it's definitely egregious. But again, it's not in any nefarious way. In New York, they had a situation, it's largely located in the Bronx, where they had about 120,000 provisional ballots, and this is really insane. 91,000, about 3 out of 4 votes, weren't counted in the original run-through. They were set aside, which obviously, it's terrible. It's an unforgivable clusterfuck, but that's not something you can view as voter suppression, you know? Monumental fuck-up, yeah, but not suppression. This isn't what we saw in places like Georgia, where specific affiliations and ballots were targeted. This was en masse. It was just a whole chunk of votes just got tossed aside or had problems or issues or whatever they ended up saying as their excuse, because yeah, it was a fuck up. And honestly, en masse in an area that, if anything, it was probably beneficial to Sanders. You know, New York was a state Clinton owned. She ended up getting over 57% of the vote, or about 300,000 more statewide. So those 90,000 votes probably would have only added to her win. But even if they hadn't, even if all 90,000 went to Sanders, she'd still have won the state by a solid margin. So no dice on that front. But what we can talk about, and it's funny because most of this was scrutinized well after the fact, is Clinton's funding of that broke-ass DNC. So starting right out of the gate towards the end of Obama's presidency and into the Democratic primaries, the DNC was deep, deep, deep in debt, largely because Obama, I think, had viewed his own fundraising apparatus, which is called Obama for America, as his party's chief financier. It's noted that he and Debbie Wasserman Schultz didn't really get along, but she was the head of the DNC for 6 years because he just didn't really care about it. It gives you an idea of how much of a priority the DNC was. He had his own funding methods, and he had that email list that was revolutionary at the time. It had a bit of legend to it, and that's what he seemed to count on, that he could use his own methods and kind of his own staff, his own regiment, I guess, he thought it was more efficient than what the DNC was or what the DNC could do, so he kind of left them onto the side. Meanwhile, the DNC was kind of rudderless, and it's just hemorrhaging money on consulting fees and everything else. So fast forward to the 2016 campaign, and the Clintons bail out the DNC with that massive war chest they have. And in exchange, they get a ton of say and influence on key hiring and placement of positions within the DNC. Now, that's a problem on a lot of levels, obviously. But to be fair to Hillary, maybe not in the way we would expect. The problem, it's not, is that while these jobs aren't influential on the primary, it's just a bad look, obviously. But the problem that it is that while these jobs aren't influential on the primary, it's just a bad look, obviously. And that's always been the Clintons' problem. Habitual line steppers. That old Charlie Murphy line is a habitual line stepper. Constantly walking a line of illegal activity that goes all the way up to the point, but then you could say isn't. I think a huge part of Hillary Clinton's likability problem, and I know her supporters hate to hear that, but it's true. Part of that likability problem is that she has that lawyerly approach to these things, you know? And I really believe most people would rather be flat out lied to or cheated than have someone flirt with that line and tell you how innocent they are, you know, where it's like they get caught in something and then they go, well, actually, technically it's legal, so I don't even know what you're upset about. I think in a lot of ways, Trump's election proves that. You know, people are so bitter about government, and for good reason, by the way. I know we talk about the, you know, a lot of the bright spots and stuff here, or why you need bigger government in certain situations. But, you know, a thing liberals have to address is like there's so much corruption. There's so much of that kind of shadiness. Like government has earned its bitterness from the voting base. But I think they're so bitter about government, so many people, they just say, fuck it, give me the con man. You know, it's the devil that you know. I think sometimes you'd honestly rather have that than someone who smiles and does the Scouts Honor stuff while you know they're bending all the rules. So anyway, the DNC trades away a ton of its power, all of it basically, to the Clinton campaign to get that major bailout, which again, if you're a Bernie supporter or a strict progressive, this just highlights how problematic corporate donations are, and it's that power imbalance, but we'll get to that a little bit later. But these positions, as far as I can tell, they aren't influential directly on the 2016 primary. Most everything, the primary schedule, everything that could have been turned against Bernie was kind of already set. So these positions, even though it's a bad look, it doesn't appear to be anything that really benefits or is a detriment to Sanders. There's some kind of stuff about funding that, again, I keep saying a little bit later, but, you know, I have a structure for the show. I have a plan. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. What's funny is these hiring practices and Clinton kind of taking the helm right away didn't really hurt Bernie. It might be the exact opposite. And that's what's funny about it. It's the exact things that Bernie supporters hate about Hillary. That prematurely crowned, establishment-connected, Wall Street-backed insider that, in reality, it was the best thing that could have happened to Bernie at the beginning of his primary run. Because while I'm the first to acknowledge his positive influence on the party, the way he energized a voter base, especially a young voter base that wasn't going to come out for any of the other candidates and for getting things like Medicare for All into a national conversation, he probably wouldn't have gotten there if it wasn't for Clinton, because what we're seeing now, this field of like roughly 840 Democrats, that's what we had in 2016 too, but you don't remember it because they all dropped out almost immediately, if not entirely before the primary really began, because you had Chaffee and Webb and Lessig and O'Malley, which I Chaffee, Webb, and Lessig, it's just like a who's not, right? And O'Malley, who was, you know, the former mayor in Baltimore, and they never stood a chance, right? But more importantly, you had people like Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden, obviously, and Cory Booker and Amy Klobuchar and basically an endless list who all stood down before things even started really cooking because it was very clear who the DNC was going with. So, I mean, it can't be understated. The vice president was like, yeah, never mind. Like, that's how 100% Clinton campaign the DNC was. So it's kind of funny. You have a bought and paid for DNC that is indebted to the Clinton campaign, which crowns Clinton before the primary even starts. And so all these candidates drop out before the running even begins or within a month or two of the initial run, which clears the way for Sanders to basically be neck and neck or appear to be neck and neck with Hillary for almost the entire primary. And in one way, that's an obvious hindrance to Sanders because she's kind of got it locked up before the primary even starts. But by the same token, it's doubtful his voice would have been so amplified and his campaign would have been as sustained if it was, if that same debt to Clinton didn't clear the field almost immediately. It's like he got to be the alternative right away. He didn't have to deal with somebody like Warren. He didn't have to deal with somebody like Booker, who might be a little further left than Clinton. He didn't have to deal with any of that. He was just, you have Clinton, who's establishment, and you have me. Who do you want? And that sowed the seeds for all that division and head bashing for the entire primary. Which I want to clarify here again, just to make sure we end on the right note. I think when we look back, what Clinton did is shady. But just like I've been saying, it's not illegal or even unprecedented. I think you can say fairly or not, depending on your sympathies for her, that she is the embodiment of what people hate about politics. And if you're sympathetic to her, you can say, well, she's only doing things how they are done. And the fact that she gets all this shit isn't fair because she's playing the game as it's played and no one else gets the scrutiny that she does, which, you know, fair enough. But if you don't like her, you'll say, like, that's exactly it. She's doing them how they're done, and I hate how they're done. I want something else. And I don't think that on a moral level, anyone can look at a single candidate walking into a campaign and into a primary and essentially buying out the power system. It just feels gross. And another important thing to note, I keep qualifying myself, but there's so many little things, you know. While I don't think you can deny that the entire DNC was immediately behind her and against Sanders for the reasons stated, and of course there's all that really gross stuff, like the emails about playing up Sanders' Jewish heritage and Clinton getting questions early, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe the worst thing for me are the empty promises that Clinton gave to the DNC, because in other words, the DNC sells themselves out for her bailout money, and in return, they get to be sustainable for their goals up to and including the presidency, right? So it's like, hey, you go ahead, bail us out. We'll support you as the candidate. And then we're going to be sustainable and work on the other things that we have planned, you know, to the presidency and past. And unless you were in that 2016 Clinton campaign, that really hasn't borne fruit for you. Because not only is it borderline legal with, like I said, habitual line steppers, because they're using funding apparatuses in different states to get super donations and blah, blah, blah. The funding methods are how Clinton was able to get donations of like $350,000 and more. And they use it through these channels that can't happen directly for her campaign. They use like these statewide channels. Now, these were supposed to go to a fund that helps the state parties, and she famously said so, right? But when the FEC started looking into it, barely 1% went to state parties, with almost all the funds going directly to her campaign and its maintenance. And that's where Clinton getting say on who the DNC hires becomes troublesome, because it's these people that then help her in funneling the money from the state chapters and fundraisers directly to her campaign. Again, it's legally gray because there is some interplay with that money. But then you hire people to be on these committees that decide how the money's going to be used, and all the money just happens to funnel directly to the campaign, and you just go, girl, come on. Come on, girl. I hope that talk about, you know, how the money's going through and what money goes where, I hope that wasn't too rambling or confusing, but suffice it to say, a lot of the character ends up being true for both of them. You know, Sanders is a guy who excited a lot of people, but not enough people ultimately. And Clinton is a career politician who steps right up to the legal line and annoys the piss out of you with it. But the grand conspiracies and stuff, it just doesn't exist. If Trump's presidency has taught us anything, it's that assholes usually do their dirty work out in the open. Like the stuff that Clinton was doing, it was shady. She didn't really hide it. You know, she might use some double talk or whatever. But as far as like just taking buckets of ballots and throwing them out, it's just, it didn't happen. It just didn't. And if it did, it certainly isn't in any way that's traceable or impactful enough to have really mattered. But like the last episode, the moment of joy here is a change in me a bit. I've got way more optimism about the future and about government than I used to or that I ever have. So the moment of joy here is the wrap-up of what we see for the Democratic Party, or at least I do. And I might be naively hoping that what I see the potential of is what will take root. But shit, man, I've been a political cynic for so long that I'm just going to try this for a while. The Democratic Party angered a lot of people with how they ran this campaign. You know, they walked in feeling like the lesser of two evils, you know, even if admittedly one was kind of an annoying evil and the other was babies in cages cartoon type evil. Democrats appeared, I think, for a lot of voters to simply be that thing, the lesser of two evils. And I think the way Democrats have responded to that in a lot of ways has been really admirable. You know, they've embraced ideas that were unthinkable 4 years ago. Almost every candidate for the Democratic primary is pushing for some form of universal care, gun control reform, environmental reforms, public funding of elections. Shit, to fix the ugliness of 2016, they told states to abandon caucuses for straight primaries so that you don't have any of that weird kind of straw poll-y type stuff. And they've essentially done away with superdelegates entirely because it bothered people, because it appeared improper, right? So if you have any bitterness in your heart from 2016, let her out. Because there's still going to be disappointments. But I think where the party is headed in 2020 is light years better than it was in the last election, both in terms of platform and in terms of how they go about nomination and day-to-day occurrences. And that should count for something. You know, I'm all about holding government and individual candidates up to scrutiny and like holding them accountable. But that also includes like applauding positive changes. And I do feel like the Democratic Party has given some of that, especially in counterbalance to the warlock demon hordes of the GOP. It should count for something. So get energized, me BBs. You know, fight for your favorite and then vote for whoever the nominee ends up being regardless, you know, because shit be cray. So Diarrhea Potato 2020. We'll see you next time. Peace.
Commissioner.